There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Mighty Manfred here, and it's time for today's coolest conversations. Joining me is Sam Fender, and he's all the rage in the UK right now, having won the Critics' Choice Award at this year's Brit Awards, and last year named one of the BBC's Sound of 2018. His debut album, Hypersonic Missiles, features this week's coolest song in the world, Will We Talk? Let's give some of that a listen now, and then I'll be back with Sam on the line for your coolest conversations in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for our coolest conversations. Joining me is singer, songwriter, guitar player Sam Fender. Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Excellent. Very happy to be chatting with you. You've generated a lot of buzz in your native country, last year being named one of the BBC's Sound of 2018. This year, you won the Critics' Choice Award at the 2019 Brit Awards. But first, I'd like us to go back, Sam, back through time to your childhood, because I've read that you grew up in a musical household. What does that mean? What was your musical household like?
My dad used to play like social clubs back in the because it was in the north of England. Social clubs were kind of like the main source of entertainment for most people. So my dad used to play in bands in the social clubs back in the 70s. And then my brother was also a musician. My brother's 10 years older than me. I think I was a happy accident after a wedding.
What instruments does your dad and your brother play?
My brother plays everything from drums to guitar to Hammond organs and keys and pianos and all sorts of different things and all sorts of different string things. My dad plays piano and is a singer and also plays guitar. But both of them write songs as well. They're both songwriters as well.
So both songwriters as well. I was wondering about that.
And like they dabbled songwriting between it wasn't their main job. It wasn't their primary job. Like my dad was an electrician, and my brother has done everything from he used to run buskers nights to playing wedding bands to playing and to also doing removal. He's a removal man and he does various other work.
So your brother and your dad, they've been very supportive of your efforts.
Yeah, they've been massively supportive. It's all just going a bit crazy over here at the moment since we've got the number one album and all of that. It's
right,
kind of crazy. So you need your parents, you need your family when things go a bit crazy.
So your dad and your brother, they're writing songs, they're playing in bands. What kind of music was permeated in the house? What were you guys listening to growing up to?
My dad was always used to play loads of old soul and old rock and roll. So there's always like Aretha Franklin, Sam and Dave, and it'd be like then rock and roll bands, sort of like Spencer Davis Group and stuff like that, like from the 60s. That would always be playing in the house. Everything from that to Steely Dan and all of them, sort of like all the sort of the old rock stuff. And then my brother was playing me like Bruce Springsteen and Joni Mitchell and Dylan. And then would be playing me things like, but then the British side, they would be listening to things like Oasis and all of the sort of Britpop stuff. And like, I was born in 1994, so like Oasis were a big part of my upbringing as well. Right. And then, and the Beatles, of course. And then at school, I was listening to everything from like Kendrick Lamar to like mad sort of happy hardcore house music as well. So I listen to a lot of different stuff with my old school hip hop and things at school.
Well, I was reading that you found solace in like Bruce Springsteen's music. How did his music relate to your own experience?
Well, I guess I'm from a seaside town. It's kind of like, weirdly kind of like Jersey. I mean, even so much so that the TV show Jersey Shore got replicated on this side of the Atlantic from my hometown, and it was called Geordie Shore. It's kind of like, it's rough and ready. The boys kind of like to wear lots of fake tan and stuff, and they like to, and they have like, you know, they're all pumped up, and it's kind of like, I just think growing up around that, and everyone's quite straight talking, and like everyone's a blue collar town. Mm-hmm. It has its kind of fair share of economic problems over the years. Like, and I think when Springsteen's lyrics are kind of talking about that, I guess one of the lines beyond the palace, heavy powered drones screamed down the boulevard, girls combing their hair in rearview mirrors, and the boys trying to look so hard. Like, that is literally just my hometown. Like, that is my hometown on a Friday night. Like, because we've got all of the amusement parks and all of the seaside classic resorts, but right, they're all kind of losing their sheen a bit. Do you know what I mean?
And, yeah.
As the years progress. Like, it's kind of, it's a great sense of that the town kind of had its glory days years ago, and I guess I just connected with that. And it was also the first time that I heard like rock and roll music that like felt, I don't know, it felt different to me. It was like when I heard Born to Run for the first time, it was like theatrical, and it was the lyrics I really connected to, I suppose, when I was like 15. But yeah, man, Bruce Springsteen means more to me than just that. Like, he actually came over when all of the industry closed down in the 80s. Yeah. A lot of my dad's friends, like a lot of people lost their jobs. Like, we had a lot of friends and family who lost work and things like that when Thatcher closed down all the industry. And Springsteen did a gig in 1984 in St. James's Park in my hometown. And he actually donated like thousands of dollars to the Miners Association, to the Miners' Wives, all the families that went on there, mm-hmm, over here, because he felt like it reminded him of his hometown and what had happened there in Jersey. So I kind of like, I don't know, I just feel like he's talking about my parents or talking about me or talking about my hometown. It's kind of just the most I've ever been connected to songs, I think, in my life.
Wow. Well, I also know you recently, you met little Steven. Were you aware of his work with Bruce?
Yeah, obviously. I was completely blown away. I was freaking out. I was trying my best not to be a total fanboy, but I failed miserably. But luckily, Steven was okay with that, and he didn't think I was a complete and utter psycho.
You know, I introduced you as a singer-songwriter. Is that a term that you like, or do you think of yourself more as a rock and roller?
I guess a bit of both, really. I like the idea of being a singer-songwriter. I think writing is kind of my saving grace. I think it's the thing that makes me find any answers to things. But yeah, I'll take both, mate. You can call me whatever you want.
Excellent. Well, we already mentioned Bruce, and I imagine you're a Bob Dylan fan. Are there any other singer-songwriters that have been especially influential to you?
Yeah, I love John Martin. I love Nick Drake, Joni Mitchell, Jeff Buckley. Loads of stuff, man. I love music.
Yeah, well, let's talk some about your stuff. Now, was your debut single Play God?
Yeah, okay. It is.
So, and Hypersonic Missiles, that's the full-length album, the debut album. That's got singles from 2017 and 2018, including our coolest song in the world this week, Will We Talk. So when was Will We Talk recorded?
It was recorded, I think it was in February, and just after Christmas.
Just after Christmas. And where did you record it, and who produced it?
Bramwell Bronte. He's my producer and my best friend, and he's a total legend and a genius and a sweetheart.
Well, how do you know this genius and sweetheart? How did you guys meet?
So, basically, it was a classic story of a bonding of the loss, really. We both needed each other, I think. I was coming out of a really kind of weird place in my life, and I wanted to make music, but I was kind of struggling to find anybody to kind of help me translate that into records. And he'd been working in a studio, and he'd been working there for 15 years, and he was just been slogging away, not in the same studio, but he'd been working on music for 15 odd years, and he was just slogging away, kind of getting bands coming in that he didn't like and stuff that he like really hated, but had to do it as a, you know, necessity, financial necessity, had to do this sort of work.
Right.
And my best friend at the time was the T-boy. He just became the T-boy in that studio, and he was just kind of like an understudy. He was trying to learn things from Tom.
Uh-huh.
And Tom turned to him one day, and he turned around to Dean and said, you know, he says, I can't really do this anymore. He's like, this isn't like, it's not a viable option anymore. Like, music, I'm not doing the stuff that I want to do. It's not creative anymore, and it's really running me under. And Dean was like, no, you've got to meet my friend Sam. He really wants to work with somebody, work with him.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of how it happened. We met each other, and I humped my Fender twin amp into his apartment, like into the small room, and plugged it in, and he set up his dictaphone. He went, okay, what songs have you got? And I just sat and played him every single song that I had there. Like, it was my last night on Earth. And then that was the start of it. That was like 4.5 years ago, and we just started recording from then on, and it took us years, but we got there in the end.
Right. Wow. Well, let me talk some more about this coolest song, Will We Talk? So the title of the song posed as a question. Let me ask, in real life, did you talk in the morning?
No, the characters did not talk in the morning. As most people in Newcastle after a one-night stand out in the club.
So another track on the album, a single you released earlier, Dead Boys. Now, that's a pretty heavy song. Is that about friends of yours that committed suicide?
Yeah, a friend of mine committed suicide, and then I kind of wrote this song. I just wrote it as a more kind of about the abject shock of losing somebody in that situation, and the kind of the frustration of living in hindsight and maybe knowing that you could have done something. And I wrote it for that, and then I was kind of like hesitant and skeptical of whether I should release it or not. I didn't want to kind of capitalize on the tragedy of my friend, and then somebody else took their life who we knew, and then it was kind of like became more apparent that it was a problem that nobody talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And there was loads of boys in my hometown kind of taking their lives. And then when I spoke to my inner circle about it, like even within my friends group and within my work group, like the people that I worked with, they were all saying, oh, like, yeah, I know somebody, or yeah, my dad did it, or whatever. And that made me realize that nobody talks about it. So we, like, I think it became like, oh, well, this is a good song. We should release it. It clearly needs to be spoken about. You know, I didn't actually know about the stats in my country, but in the UK, it's like it's the biggest killer of men under the age of 45. It takes 84 lives a week. So that's like more than, you know, that's more than crime, that's more than car crash, and that's more than illness or, you know, cancer or anything. Like, suicide's the biggest killer of men, like in the UK. And that, for me, was just completely staggering. I was like, this is clearly a serious problem. You know, it has a lot to do with austerity, and it has a lot to do with the economic side of things, just what's going on in my country at the moment. But I don't know, it just became a song that kind of we felt actually needed to come out, and when it came out, it took nothing but positive things. It was even so much so that there was a guy that was actually on his way to kill himself, and was driving down the road, and he had Five Live on, and I was speaking on Five Live to the house DJ in Manchester, and we're talking about Dead Boys, and we're talking about the track, and this guy actually stopped his car on the side of the road, cried for 3 hours, then drove back, went to his wife and said, look, I need to get help.
Yeah.
And 6 months later, he reached out to us with an email and said that show and us talking about that and talking about men's mental health at the time, was just that one split second that took him out of that place in his head. And it was the catalyst for him to then go and get help. And I met the guy, and he's remained anonymous, obviously, that's understandable. But it was just kind of like, it was one, like, I'm never ever going to overestimate my job as a singer-songwriter. Like, I'm not, singer-songwriters aren't, we're not heroes, we're not like doctors or teachers or, you know, firemen or policemen, you know, we're not going out there and, you know, saving people's lives or teaching kids or, you know what I mean, like, we're entertainers primarily. But there's some moments where music connects with people on such a level that it actually does something like that. That moment is the most humbling thing I've ever experienced, and it actually gave my job a little bit more clout than I thought it ever did have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's, for me, like, it doesn't matter where my career goes, like, that's the best thing that's ever happened to it, and that will always be the best thing that will ever happen, you know what I mean?
Well, you're not too far removed from your own adolescence. How important was having music in your life managing those formative years?
I don't think I'd be here if I didn't have music, genuinely. It's the only thing that can pull me out of a place when I'm bad, I think. I use it for everything. I use music to get out of bed. I use it to get in the shower, to make myself happy, to guide myself through times of turmoil. And in trouble, I use it to communicate a point. You know, I use it for everything. You use it to party, to commemorate people who have died. You know what I mean? It's just, it's everywhere. It's such an intrinsic part of the human race and our culture and everything that, you know, I couldn't live without it.
Or you've got any tour plans coming up for the U.S. anytime soon?
Yeah. I think we're hitting quite a few places. I know we're doing some cities on either coast, and I think some in between as well. We're playing the Bowery Ballroom, I think, or whatever it's called.
There's the Bowery Ballroom.
We're playing there.
Hey, you got this. Your surname Fender.
Yeah.
And you mentioned playing a Fender amp. So, did you call those guys up and say, "Hey, cousin, sponsor me"?
I tried my best to kind of convince them that I had some sort of lineage to Leo Fender, but it didn't work. I didn't get my cut of the business, sadly, but they've given me a few free guitars. So, yeah, it's all going good.
Good, good. Well, I was reading some bio stuff on you, and so this got me a little confused. Did you also do some acting and appeared in some British TV shows several years ago?
I did a little bit of acting when I was 15. I got murdered. I got murdered in a detective program when I was 15 years old. And I also had had a part when I was 17 in like a children's TV program. It's pretty embarrassing.
No, man, I think that's cool, especially the part about being, murdered on a detective show. How excellent is that? That is cool.
It's pretty crazy.
Well,
pretty crazy.
We need to take a listen to the title track to Hypersonic Missiles before we wrap up. First, I want to say I was listening to the lyrics, and I get the idea of the song. You know, it's time to wipe the slate clean, start all over again. But you sing in the chorus, the pre-chorus, maybe, about how you want to give everything. Hypersonic Missiles, that's really a love song.
Yeah, it is. It is a love song. Yeah, you nail on the head. A lot of people think it isn't, but yeah, it's a love song.
So how did
it's a really, really it's an unorthodox love song about nuclear missiles. This character who's sort of like hopelessly addicted to the fruits of capitalism and the Western world, and is like loves junk food and loves American TV, but total like stoner conspiracy theorist, believing like terrified that the world's gonna end. Right. Loosely sort of based on myself, and then I just wanted to create a character that was like, but like all of this sort of like this fear mongering that the character's surrounded by is kind of taking over them, and they genuinely think that the world's gonna end. But amidst all of this panic and fear is this love story, and this guy or girl or whoever it is in love with somebody. And the kind of whole premise of the song is that like we're in turbulent times, and I think it's important to kind of to huddle against your loved ones, because we've got a big fight ahead of us, I think, in this kooky world that we live in. And that's kind of what the song's about. It's just kind of celebrating the love, and it's celebrating like no matter what comes of this, I'm going to devote everything I've got to the people I love, without sounding completely cheesy, but that is what it's about.
Well, I think it's great, and best of luck with everything you're coming up, the tour, and continued success with the album. So Sam, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you so much. Cheers, mate.
Well, let's give a listen now to the title track to the debut album. Here's Hypersonic Missiles, Sam Fender and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Kids hop balloons in the parking lot. The gold notches illuminate the business park. I eat myself to death, feed the corporate machine. I watch some movies, recite every line and scene. God bless America and all of its allies. I'm not the first to live with wool over my eyes. I am so blissfully unaware of everything. Kids and girls are a bomb, and I'm just out of it. Look, tensions are the world are rising higher. We're probably due another war with all desire. I'm not smart enough to change a thing. I have no answers, only questions. Don't you ask a thing.
Hypersonic Missiles. That is a title track to the debut album from Sam Fender.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Sam for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our segment. And join me next week when we'll check in with Larry Kennedy of the Jelly Bricks, whose new album, Some Kind of Lucky, is available now. That's your next week's Coolest Conversations here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.